And welcome, Mark. In step two, examine the nature of unborn awareness, or of awareness which is unborn, which means to turn our attention to the mind that is experiencing our reality as a dream. And we could ask ourselves a few questions to bring ourselves into alignment with our awareness. Does it have a color? Can we find a location for it? Just asking and then resting. As Ken McLeod says, whatever question we ask, we find that we cannot say. And we rest in that. And then step three, let even the remedy release naturally, means whatever conceptual conclusions we may have come to about things being like a dream, or our mind not having any identifiable qualities, we let go of that and rest without conceptuality. For the fourth step, rest in the essence, the basis of everything, also known as Buddha nature, the nature of mind, and so forth. Resting, letting thoughts come and go as we always do, letting perceptions come and go. Our awareness is very open and receptive, but not getting caught up in any new thoughts or perceptions, simply letting them flow and resting in that. And anytime we feel we lose touch with it, whatever it may be, we just come back. We just let go of being caught up in something and just come back to resting non-conceptually. In whatever thoughts and perceptions may arise in the present moment. And now, without losing touch with that vast awareness and the flow of experience, we can also cultivate relative bodhicitta, through taking and sending. Practice taking and sending alternately, synchronizing with the breath. We all know that method, so we just do it with whatever focus we wish. Someone we love, someone we feel neutral towards, someone we're having trouble with, especially in view of our practice of patience over the last couple of weeks. We might bring to mind someone we find irritating. Breathe in their suffering. Breathe out happiness, healing, peace of mind, and whatever they need. Thinking that by breathing in their suffering, we're really freeing them from it, and they have less and less. By sending them our happiness, healing, and so forth, they're really receiving it. Now expanding our visualization and intention to include all sentient beings, whatever kind of suffering we may have, whatever relationship with them we may have, breathing in the suffering of all beings, letting it dissolve into our vast Buddha nature along with our breath, breathing out whatever is needed. If we're distressed or in pain or having any kind of difficulties at this moment, we can include ourselves. Breathing in our own suffering, breathing out whatever's needed. including not only humans, but animals and beings in all the other realms. And now thinking that we've succeeded and all beings, including ourselves, are completely freed from suffering, completely filled with happiness and peace and well-being, and completely awakened. And then going back to letting go of any visualizations and conceptions about taking and sending, going back to just following the breath or resting in open awareness, whichever is more comfortable. And then letting go of any focus and coming back to study and contemplation mode. Stretch for a moment or whatever you need to do, take a sip of water. I'm going to bring up the verses so we can chant those. I forgot to set it up before I joined, so it's taking a moment. Okay, I'm going to share the screen. And we're going to do the same thing we did last week to save time. We're going to chant the first verse in its entirety. I'm going to just move these up. Just chant the first verse in its entirety because it's the basis for all the rest. And we're just going to say the names of the rest of the verses until verse 20, and then we'll chant the whole verses. So verse 1, to study, contemplate, and meditate. This precious human life so hard to find, its freedoms and resources like a boat, to navigate samsara's endless sea, and set myself and other beings free, without distraction always day and night, to study, contemplate, and meditate. This is the way a bodhisattva trains. So the rest of the preliminary verses, verse 2, to leave my homeland. Verse 3, to rely on solitude. Verse 4, to let go of attachment to this lifetime. Verse 5, to give up negative friends. Verse 6, to rely on spiritual friends. And verse 7, to seek refuge in the three jewels. Those are the preliminaries that are ongoing practices for us. So we don't want to lose sight of them. And then the three levels of motivation for Dharma practice, of which we need all three in order to travel the Bodhisattva path. Verse 8, to refrain from harm at all costs. Verse 9, to strive for unchanging freedom. Verse 10, to liberate all beings. And then the linchpin of the Bodhisattva practices, the practice that we apply to all of them, verse 11, taking and sending, to exchange my happiness for others' suffering. Let's chant that one in its entirety. The source of every single suffering is wishing for my happiness alone, while focusing on others' benefit gives rise to Buddhahood awakening. To fully and wholeheartedly exchange my happiness for others' suffering. This is the way a bodhisattva trains. And then the Bodhisattva boot camp verses, we'll just say the names of those. Verse 12, to repay theft with generosity. Verse 13, to repay harm with compassion. Verse 14, to repay slander with love. Verse 15, to repay humiliation with respect. Verse 16, to repay ingratitude with affection. And verse 17, to repay disrespect with reverence. Verse 18, to maintain resolve when everything is going wrong. Verse 19, to maintain focus and humility when all goes right. So we're going to, starting with verse 20, we're going to chant all the verses in their entirety to the end, to verse 28. If I don't tame my inner enemy, the poison of aggression, anger, hate, then outer enemies just multiply. No matter how to vanquish them, I fight to tame my own mind with an army of the forces of compassion, kindness, love. This is the way a bodhisattva trains. Sense pleasures and desire are like salt water. The more I drink them in, the more I crave. Therefore, the moment that attachment stirs, to drop it right away without a pause. This is the way a bodhisattva trains. And now these are the ultimate bodhicitta verses. The first one's the meditation, and 23 and 24 are how to practice in daily life. All appearances are my own mind. Mind's nature from the start is concept-free. To know my own mind's nature and refrain from grasping onto subject-object signs, this is the way a bodhisattva trains. When I encounter something that's delightful, such as a rainbow on a summer day, to give up all attachment to its beauty and never cling to it as truly real, this is the way a bodhisattva trains. All forms of suffering are just like dreaming that my beloved child has passed away. Appearances like these are just delusions. To take them as true drains my energy. When I encounter adverse circumstances, to see them as delusions of my mind, this is the way a bodhisattva trains. And now, Adharmitas. If wishing to attain awakening, I need to give even my body up, then doesn't it go also without saying that this applies to mere external stuff, without hope for reward or benefit, to generously give away a gift? This is the way a bodhisattva trains. If through a lack of ethical conduct, I can't accomplish my own benefit, then any aspiration to achieve the benefit of others is a joke. To keep and guard my ethical conduct completely free from worldly influence, this is the way a bodhisattva trains. For bodhisattvas wishing to accrue a wealth of wholesome virtue and good deeds, all harm is like a precious treasure trove from other people or adversity. To cultivate a patient attitude, not feeling irritated or abused, this is the way a bodhisattva trains. And our current verse, to persevere with joyful effort, we will chant this one 3 times. If listeners and solitary Buddhas, in striving just for their own benefit, are seen to focus with the same resolve as putting out a fire on their head. Since my aim is to benefit all beings and effort is the source of all good traits, I must engage with joyful perseverance. This is the way a bodhisattva trains. If listeners and solitary Buddhas, in striving just for their own benefit, are seen to focus with the same resolve as putting out a fire on their head. Since my aim is to benefit all beings and effort is the source of all good traits, I must engage with joyful perseverance. This is the way a bodhisattva trains. One more time. If listeners and solitary Buddhas, in striving just for their own benefit, are seen to focus with the same resolve as putting out a fire on their head. Since my aim is to benefit all beings, and effort is the source of all good traits, I must engage with joyful perseverance. This is the way a bodhisattva trains. I'm going to take this moment to make a correction and italicize the last two lines in keeping with our new way of doing this. All right. And we're back. Okay, does anybody have any questions or comments before we go on to everything else? You can unmute yourself or get my attention and I'll unmute you. All right. So the first thing I wanted to do was a pop quiz. And as we know, those are silent and internal. Just reminders of the main points. We're going to first review the paramitas to date. So what are the first four paramitas? See if you can list them in your head. So the first one is generosity. Second one, ethical conduct, or any of the other names that you want to call it. Third is patience. And fourth, the one we're on today, is joyful effort or perseverance. The three types of, so we have generosity. What are the three types of generosity, the three ways we practice it? I'm going through this too, like, can I bring it all up in my mind? So the first one is material generosity, giving away stuff, whatever will help beings in a material way. Second kind of generosity is called giving fearlessness, and we can also think of it as giving like emotional support, whatever kind of support people need to be, to not be afraid, to not be worried, if they're ill, if they're having a hard time, you know, whatever the situation is, however we can help beings through support, like emotional support. And then third, giving the Dharma. Okay, second paramita, ethical conduct. And the definition of generosity. I don't remember dwelling on this particularly in class, but it's really good to know the definitions. And I'm saying that knowing that we're not going to do the definition of ethical conduct. What's the definition of generosity, like the official definition? It is to give completely without attachment. So ethical conduct, the reason we're not doing the definition is because it's complicated and requires a lot of explanation, and I'm not even sure I understand the first point of it. So that can be looked up in Ornament of Precious Liberation, and I'm going to look it up, and maybe we'll talk about it in another class. I just realized today that we hadn't gone over it. So, but we can still know the three types. What's really important about it is to know the three types, the three ways we practice ethical conduct. We'll see if you know those. First one, to refrain from harm. And we can use the 10 unvirtuous actions as a guide to what kinds of harm we need to refrain from. Plus, it's often quite obvious. Second kind is to accumulate virtue, to do our own practice, to travel the path ourselves, all kinds of Dharma activity. And then the third kind is to help beings in whatever way is needed. So that's the engaged Buddhism piece of it. It's there in our 12th century guide to enlightenment, the 11 specific ways listed in Ngampopa's Ornament of Precious Liberation, in which we are exhorted to come to the rescue, come to the aid of all sentient beings when they need help. Patience. I'm sure everybody remembers the definition of patience because we have dwelt upon that one quite a lot. And that is to not be perturbed by anything. That's ideal patience. That's, you know, I would say transcendent patience, but transcendence means that we remember emptiness, that there's no one being patient. There's no one to be patient with, and nothing actually happened. So the three kinds of patients, and it's very, very handy to know these as you go through distressing situations that could be upsetting and irritating. The first kind of patience is to be patient with other beings when they harm you or irritate you. The second kind of patience is to be patient with circumstances, with adversity, with hardships, especially what interferes with our Dharma practice, but really to be patient with all adversity, anything that irritates us, such as our technology, for example, my personal favorite thing to get irritated with. And then third, to be patient with the vast and profound meaning of the Dharma, particularly with regard to emptiness. And I don't know if people have had a chance to look at the post, my post, the class notes on verse 27, part 2, but I found a really, really helpful explanation by Lama Norla Rinpoche in one of his Dharma Path teachings, the teaching on mandala, where he talks about the paramitas. Really helpful explanation of what the third kind of patience means. So I encourage everybody to read that because we're not going to go over it now. The last thing in the pop quiz, and this is a really useful way to spend our time for those who may prefer to move on to something else, is, so with regard to the first kind of patience, being patient with other beings, what are the three ways that in which we need to practice that? The first way is to really lay, is the definition of patience, to just not be bothered by it, just let it go. Don't get caught up by it. But we may not always be able to rise to that occasion, to that high standard. So the other ways are to not retaliate, to not lash out, at least to not use our speech and our actions to return harm for harm. And the third way is to not hold resentment, not hold on to anger. As I said last week, my favorite quote that I heard from Pema Chidren, though I don't know if it originates from her, is that holding on to anger is like eating rat poison and thinking the rat will die. I think it's a very apt analogy. Okay, any questions then or comments before we go on to today's commentaries? Okay. So we're mostly today going to look at Ningbo Chense, Heart of Compassion, because it's all here. I'm going to pull in a couple of other resources as we have time. And also I wanted to say that I'm going to strive to end class about 5 minutes early today, so that we can go over for those who need it. Oh, where's Valerie? Oh, those who need it, how to update Zoom. If everybody's figured that out, then you don't need to stay. I see some shaking heads. So John is going to lead us through. It's such an easy thing to do, but you just have to know what to look for in your Zoom application. So John is going to screen share and lead us through that last few minutes of class. We'll do the dedication first for those who may not be staying for that. But if you are with us regularly and you don't know how to update Zoom, please either stay for John's instructions on that or read my email detailed instructions. It literally takes less than a minute to do it once you know how. And it will improve the viewing experience for everybody. We'll have fewer glitches. Okay, so we're on to what Dingo Chense Rinpoche calls transcendent diligence. If you're looking at the book, it's on page 160. And I assume everybody has already read and studied it. But we're gonna go over it and comments and questions are welcome anytime. So he starts by saying, to awaken and to develop all the paramitas, diligence is vital. Diligence is the joyous effort and active determination to carry out positive actions without any expectations or self-satisfaction. It's an expanded definition. We're going to look, if we have time, at the definition in Ornament of Precious Liberation as well. But I just wanted to bring in Geshe Jampa Tegchok briefly. He says, joyous effort, he calls it joyous effort, which is what Mingyur Rinpoche calls it, is a mental factor that takes delight in and enjoys virtue. And that's pretty much the definition of Ornament of Precious Liberation. It means to delight in virtue, to delight in study, contemplation, and meditation, to delight in the 10 virtuous actions, and so forth. He says, it makes, joyous effort makes practicing Dharma enjoyable because it delights in any virtuous activity that will benefit sentient beings. And he further clarifies, because we could feel joy in a lot of activities, right? Even harmful ones could feel joyous when we're doing them before they turn on us and cause suffering. He says, from the viewpoint of the Dharma, having energy for worldly things is not joyous effort. So it's only joyous effort, technically in a Dharma sense, if it is related to Dharma activity. So that's what... maybe I will just take a moment and we'll look at ornament precious liberation while we're on the definition. It's on page 191 if you're using the 10 poems book. Oh, actually it's on 192. So the nature of diligence, or the definition of diligence according to Gampopa, is to delight in virtue. But the same thing that Geshe Jangpa Tekchok said, and that Dingo Chense Rinpoche said a little more expansively. I'll repeat his. So Dingo Chense says, diligence is the joyous effort and active determination. So that's twofold. It's like joyous. It's threefold. Joyous effort and active determination to carry out positive actions without any expectations and without any self-satisfaction. And he's going to explain self-satisfaction. I misread it the first time I read the commentary. What it means is to not ever think you've done enough, not to be satisfied with your efforts and with your accumulation of virtue, but to always keep going. And that's going to turn out to be the third kind of diligence. So again, diligence, like all the other paramitas, has three aspects. The first, called armor-like diligence, is to develop a joyous courage and fortitude, which you wear like armor against discouragement. And fortitude is an interesting word to me. Some people, including Ken McLeod, use it instead of patience for the third paramita. I quibble with that myself. They're near synonyms, but they're not quite synonyms. And fortitude kind of is like a bridge between patience and perseverance to me, like having studied the dictionaries intensively. If anybody has any comments on that, you're welcome. But that's what I've come up with. But anyway, so armor-like diligence means to develop a joyous courage and fortitude, which you wear like armor against discouragement. So that's his brief. So he's going to do what authors of texts often do, authors of our traditional texts. He's going to give us an outline, like he's just going to list the three kinds, and then he's going to explain each one. So the second kind of diligence or perseverance is diligence in action, which is to set about accumulating merit through the practice of the six paramitas without delay or procrastination. And that's what makes it perseverance, that we don't waste any time, but we get right to it and keep doing it. So that's the action part of it. The third is diligence that cannot be stopped. An insatiable and unremitting energy to work for the sake of others. So that sort of refers back to his saying that we do it without self-satisfaction. It's insatiable and unremitting. He says, diligence should permeate the practice of the other paramitas and invigorate them all. So we apply diligence or joyful enthusiasm or perseverance to generosity. Every opportunity for generosity, we jump on it. Ethical conduct and patience, and also the paramitas still to come. They should all be permeated by diligence. So now he's going to explain each of the three kinds in a little more detail. He says the first kind, armor-like diligence. I always think of an armadillo for some reason. This always brings an image of an armadillo to my mind. Even though I've been to Texas a couple of times, I've never actually seen an armadillo in person. But I always, so now I think of it's like the armadillo of perseverance is the image I carry with me when I think of perseverance. So the first kind, armor-like diligence, is to put on the armor of a strong and courageous determination that you will never fall prey to obstacles created by the four demons. He calls them four demons. We often use the Sanskrit, the four Maras, which he lists as the Mara of negative emotions, the Mara of attachment to comfort, the Mara of physical sickness, and the Mara of death. So we determine that we will never fall prey to these obstacles, but will persist, come what may, in our efforts to accomplish the extraordinary activities of Bodhisattva until we have established all beings in enlightenment. So you'll notice that the three kinds of perseverance, I still don't really know what to call it, three kinds of joyful effort are a progression. The first one is the determination that we will keep going no matter what on behalf of all sentient beings. Nothing will stop us. The second kind, diligence in action, is like actually doing it. This is determined perseverance in the actual application of that wish that we developed in the first kind of joyful effort. Feeling a great joy to be able to practice, to travel the five paths and attain the 10 bodhisattva levels. You enthusiastically undertake endless meritorious activities, particularly study, reflection, and meditation. Engaging in all this, sustain an indomitable courage and never fall prey to discouragement, laziness, or procrastination. We're going to get more on laziness. That's actually my favorite part of the diligence chapter, is the three kinds of laziness, which he's also going to explain. So we have two, now we have two steps. The first is the resolve, and the second is doing it, the actual action. The third kind of diligence is diligence that cannot be stopped. The insatiable energy to work constantly for the sake of others. Day and night, engage in every way possible, directly or indirectly, in your thoughts, words, and deeds to benefit beings. I mean, he's leaving us no loopholes here. Every way possible, day and night, directly, indirectly, thoughts, words, and deeds. We have to direct all of this to the benefit of beings. If you are not able to help them directly, you should keep nothing in your mind but the benefit of others and dedicate everything you do toward the attainment of Buddhahood, toward their attainment of Buddhahood. So this sort of brings up a point that comes up in various contexts. Like, what if you actually can't do something for the Syrian refugee? You know, so we develop the aspiration, we cultivate the aspiration to be able to help them. And of course, we can make prayers for them. We could do taking and sending for them. But when we can't actually physically, materially help someone that we see is in need of help, then we aspire to be able to do it in the future. So those are the three kinds of diligence or joyful effort. The determination, the application, and then the not stoppingness. Like, we don't stop. We never feel we've done enough. Any comments or questions before we get to the three kinds of laziness? Okay. So each of these three kinds of diligence, says Dingo Chenxian on page 161 near the bottom, each of these three kinds of diligence has its opposite in a corresponding kind of laziness. I never thought of it that way, that that the three kinds of laziness correspond to the three kinds of diligence, and I'm not exactly sure I see it exactly, especially with regard to the second one, but that's something we could contemplate. We could look at that more closely. But we'll just list the three kinds of laziness. First one is what we think of as laziness. Like, it's the obvious, it's what we call laziness, is the wish for nothing but your own comfort. It manifests as a tendency to sleep and idleness, to crave immediate satisfaction and comfort, and in so doing, to ignore the Dharma. It means to put off your practice because you don't feel like it, or because you'd rather watch TV or go out with friends, or, you know, or whatever the excuse is, that we don't engage in Dharma activity because it's not what we want to do right now. The antidote. So what do you do when you don't feel like practicing? The antidote is to meditate on the usual thing, death and impermanence. That is really the, like, that's the answer to any kind of lack of motivation in the Dharma. And it's the piece of advice that Lama Narla Rinpoche always said was the most valuable thing that his root Lama, Tarje Jansol, ever said to him, was remember impermanence. Never forget impermanence. So if we don't feel like practicing, if we feel lazy, if we don't feel like helping that sentient being who needs help, the antidote is just to remember death and impermanence. So if that's what we think of as laziness, what are the other kinds of laziness? What else does, like, the Dharma categorize as laziness? And I know most of us have been over these before, so you may remember. The second kind of laziness, here Dingo Chenzi Rinpoche calls it faint-heartedness. He said, you feel discouraged before you have even begun trying to do something because you think a person like you will never reach enlightenment no matter how hard you try. The antidote, well, let's think about that for a minute, though. I mean, don't we think like that? I think many of us are very familiar with that way of thinking, like, okay, maybe I have Buddha nature, but I'm never going to be a Buddha. Like, why do I even bother? Like, what's the point of sitting and doing this practice? Because I'm never going to be Vajrasattva. I'm never going to be imperturbable like Akshobhya. But the teaching is that we can. So let's see what the antidote is. The antidote to thinking that I'm just not worthy is to strengthen your fortitude, which is, again, a combination of patience and perseverance, by reflecting on the benefits of liberation and enlightenment. Okay. I'm not sure if that would get me out of it. Specifically, I'm going to have to try that if I fall into that. Because if you think you just can't do it, then, like, the benefits would just seem like impossible to achieve. Anybody have a thought? Marilyn, you look like you had a thought. I'm going to unmute you. All right.
It was the fact that this is the same, sounds to me exactly what, like, Lama Norla said, well, Rinpoche said for patients with the Dharma.
Yeah, can you get a little bit closer to the microphone and say that again?
I thought Lama Norla Rinpoche said that when he was discussing, well, what you brought up, mm-hmm. That he was, using the same kind of definition for the third kind of patients. Patients for the Dharma or something, and his, mm-hmm. It sounded like this is what he was talking about.
Was talking about, right, oh yeah, that's one of the things, yeah, in the class notes online where I quote Lama Narla Rinpoche from the teaching on the six paramitas in the mandala section of Dharmapath, yeah, that's one of the things he talks about, is thinking that we could never be like Milarepa, we could never be like the Buddha, we could never achieve enlightenment. That's one of the ways that you can be afraid of the profound meaning of the Dharma. So yes, thanks for pointing that out, Marilyn. This fits right in with that, the third kind of patience. Anybody else? Jinzong, Lama Jinzong, you are unmuted.
I agree with you that, you know, because it's the same thing. If you're saying I can't reach enlightenment, then to think of the qualities is just to make yourself feel even worse. Yeah. Oh, well, gosh, gee, I'll never be able to do all of that. Yeah. So, and then secondly, though, Marilyn had a good point. And so could you just remind us, even though I did read the study notes, when Lama Narla Rinpoche did say, you know, about if you don't think you can do what Milarepa achieved, what did he answer? I just don't remember at the moment.
I'm gonna look in my file. I can pull it in a second. I need it. Mandala file. And as you're waiting, you can just rest in the nature of mind or follow the breath, whichever comes first. Okay, so patience. So I'm just going to read what he said. Next time is our second kind. Let's get to the third kind. Okay, the third kind of patience. So we're kind of back to patience a little bit, but obviously it bears on our discussion. The third kind of patience is having of having certainty about the Dharma includes having fearless intellectual receptivity towards such things as we just described, such as the profound skillful means of the Vajrayana and also the vast scope of the deeds of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. So that means, again, that you may hear about great practitioners such as Milarepa and or the great Bodhisattvas and the activities of the Buddhas and think they can do those sort of things, but I will never be able to. But you shouldn't think that way, Ramanarla says, because you should be very decisive in your certainty that you do have Buddha nature. So we remember that we have Buddha nature. I think that's really helpful. That one would work for me. That you do have Buddha nature, and so you should, and so you do have the capacity and the potential to accomplish everything, to accomplish complete liberation. So that actually brings to mind the discussion. I think we can even go further than that. Not that I'm trying to embellish, you know, what Lamanar Rinpoche said, but it brings to mind, because I love the correspondences, in the first chapter of Ornament of Precious Liberation, where he describes what Buddha nature is and the five different ways that individual beings can be connected to Buddha nature. Like, if you know what those five are, people could be totally disconnected from their Buddha nature. And it would be very, very hard for them to make any progress on the path, although eventually it's said they will. Second kind is like wishy-washy, like indeterminate kind of connection to Buddha nature, where would, you know, if you meet this kind of teacher, Clementine, hi Clementine, sorry for the distraction, but she's so cute. What am I saying? Okay, so indeterminate, we don't have any of these. Third and fourth are like Pratyeka Buddha and Shravaka Buddha, which is the two kinds of Buddhas that where Arhat is like the highest level and they don't cultivate compassion. So they can reach a certain level, but they can't reach full Buddhahood without bringing in number five, which is having like the Mahayana level of motivation, being in the Bodhisattva, the Mahayana family. So we not only have Buddha nature, but we are in the Mahayana family. We have all the advantages of having met our teachers and so forth, which you get in the Mahayana family. We have Bodhisattva motivation. We're on the path to full awakening. I would find those thoughts very helpful. So thank you, Jinzan, for bringing that in. I was going to read a little bit more because he said a little bit more. Is that okay before I call on you guys, or raise your hand again if you need to speak right now? All right, Jinzan, Lama Jinzan, go ahead. Oh, wait a minute. I think I remuted you. Okay, now you're muted. Sorry.
Well, I don't mean to change what the point that you're about to make, but just another thought occurred to me was, you know how you were reading and you said, well, about the second laziness, and then it started with the question, well, if you think you're not worthy, is that how it started in the actual text you said, that, like in response to...
In the Dingo Chensei text?
Where it says, you know, if you think you're not worthy, like if you think I can't reach it, and the term worthy came up, did it not?
Oh, I think I just said worthy. That was me saying unworthy. He used different words. He said, you feel like you're a person who you can never reach enlightenment no matter how hard you try, how hard you...
Okay, well, the thing about worthy is it struck me because I think part of our problem is that we live in a culture that does not deem this kind of activity worthy. And because so much of our upbringing is to work at developing qualities that are considered worthy externally, and that external validation is so essential to our sense of self-worth, that it's even harder because we are trying to achieve we're deeming something valuable that in our culture is not seen as valuable, and so there's not the support. And I know that's something, especially now, that I'm very, very, very aware of. I've always been aware of that being an issue.
And we don't get the thing that validates most people, which is like a salary and a hierarchy. Like, there's no promotions particularly.
Well, I've always said that, you know, if in our society, like they would say, well, you're supposed to go to the health club an hour a day to get better. If only they told people they had to go meditate for an hour a day for mental health, how much healthier we would all be. That's all I have to say.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you for that. I think that's all very true and helpful. Angela, you also had your hand up.
I think also just being a health coach, when you look back and see what you've done and the progress that you've made.
Yeah.
When you start to just look at that, when you go back and you get disparaged or whatever, then you can just look back and see how far you've come. That for me is always a motivator. Like, well, I've changed this and this and this. It doesn't matter if I accomplish that ultimate goal. I've got to keep going.
Yeah. Yes, I think that's really, really helpful. And actually that sort of half formed in my mind as I was trying to figure out how the antidote would be to strengthen your fortitude by reflecting on the benefits of liberation. You could think on the benefits that you've already accrued. Like, and I think we've all felt that, right? I can certainly look back and go, oh my God, before I met Lamanar Rinpoche, what would I be if I had, that had never happened? And that does give you the motivation to keep going, I think. So thank you, Lama Jinzong and Angela. Angela, are you at the Lotus Light Center or are you home?
Oh, I'm at home right now. Oh,
okay. I thought I heard some construction activity. All right. I'm going to unmute you again. Okay. Oops. I think we're both unmuting. You're unmuted now.
Our open house is this Friday, so our constructions are done.
Oh, good. Great. Yeah, the pictures are really pretty online. All right. So anybody else have anything before we go on? Oh, I wanted to continue with Lamanar Rinpoche a little bit because I think he had something else helpful. So we shouldn't think that way, his advice, because we need to be very decisive that we have Buddha nature, and so we do have the same capacity, the capacity and potential to accomplish everything. And you should remember the words of Milarepa, who said that it was because I was afraid of dying that I went to the mountains into retreat. It started with just that simple fear that we all have of dying. He said, because I then went to the mountains into retreat and I meditated on the uncertainty of the time of death, then with that as a motivation, through that as the intent, I have now achieved a state of deathlessness and I have no fear of death because I have achieved a state beyond death. So Lamanar Rinpoche continues, it's very important to have a really strong heart and a very strong determination to practice the Dharma. So I guess he's giving Milarepa the example of Milarepa going into it because he was afraid and felt like, you know, maybe he couldn't, I don't know, he felt defeated by the idea of death, and through his practice, he gave that up or that dissolved. Anyway, there's more to it, so you can read more excerpts of it online. But I think we've made some progress in like figuring out, pinpointing the antidote. I mean, it's not, I don't think any of us would argue with Nyingbo Chenzi Rinpoche because he knows whereof he speaks. But the way that he expressed it, I didn't immediately connect with it. So I will be contemplating his thoughts on that as well, his words. So the third kind of laziness, I know we've all been waiting for that. It's my personal favorite and the one that I think we probably all engage in the most. The third kind of laziness is a neglect of your true priorities, according to Dingo Chense Rinpoche. You become stuck in negative and unproductive habits. Forgetting or ignoring deeper aims, you stay preoccupied solely with matters limited to this life. In short, we're too busy. We're too busy either with, like we take on too much work. We work too hard on things that are not Dharma things. Or we put too much energy into distractions, like fun things, entertaining things, instead of doing Dharma practice. And that busyness is the third kind of laziness. he says the antidote. So what's the antidote to this one? The antidote is to realize that all such ordinary concerns are invariably causes of suffering and to cast them far away. All worldly activity leads to suffering. Some of it, like, you know, becoming a doctor, maybe have some upsides to them. You can benefit beings that way, but they don't free you from suffering for sure. He goes on to say, people work with great endeavor day and night to accomplish things that are merely for their own comfort, fame, and power. In other words, for things that in the long term are utterly meaningless. Of the hardships you may undergo for the sake of the Dharma, however, not a single one will be without meaning. The difficult situations you experience will help you to purify the negativity accumulated in many past lives and to gather merit as a provision for lives to come. they are sure to be meaningful. So here I want to turn briefly to Geshe Jampa Tegchok, because he has a really nice further explanation of that third kind of laziness. He says, and it's called apparently the laziness that is looked down upon. He says, the laziness that is looked down upon is so called because holy beings disdain it. It refers to putting great effort into things that have no essence, such as getting back at our enemies. So here's what I like. He gave us a few examples. We put a lot of energy into getting back at people who have harmed us, on helping our friends, which is not a bad thing, you know, to help friends, but sometimes it's, again, a meaningless activity. Accumulating wealth, and in general, making ourselves the busiest of the busy due to being extremely attached to the happiness of this life. It is the cause of nothing but suffering. This laziness makes us attached to the cause of suffering. So busiest of the busy resonated with me too, because I'm just thinking how when you ask people how they're doing, like so often the answer is I'm so busy. And it's like considered a virtue to be so busy, like you're too busy. Too busy to think about anything. Very busy, all booked up all the time. And it's not bad, you know, often it's with things we really need to do. But we want to be careful that we're not shutting out our top priority, which is freeing ourselves and others from suffering and attaining complete liberation. So that's the three kinds of diligence or joyful effort, and the three kinds of laziness, which is the counterparts or the opposites, and those are what the three kinds of joyful effort are antidotes to. They are ways out of laziness. So I'm going to read a few more comments. You have about 10 more minutes or so. Read a few more comments from Dzingbo Chense Rinpoche. He says, he quotes Padampa Sanjay, and I really like this one. Without diligence, he says, bodhicitta and the activities of a bodhisattva will have no means to take root and grow in your mind. As Padampa Sanjay said, if your perseverance has no strength, you will not reach Buddhahood. People of Tingri, make sure you don that armor. So who are the people of Tingri? You see that actually in a lot of quotes from Padampa Sanjay. It turns out, I looked this up, before he died, like the last thing teaching he left behind is called the 100 Verses of Advice. And there's a commentary on it by Dzingbo Chense Rinpoche, but it's a bit expensive, so I held off exploring that. But in the 100 Verses of Advice, he's directly addressing the people of Tingri. So you see a lot of quotes from Padampa Sanjay that say, people of Tingri, make sure you don that armor. So, right. In terms of without diligence, bodhicitta and the activities of a bodhisattva will have no means to take root and grow in your mind. We're going to look briefly when we finish with Dzingbo Chense Rinpoche's commentary. We're going to take a moment to look at a little bit more of what Gampopa says in Ornament of Precious Liberation. But a couple of the other things that I found helpful from Dzingbo Chense in particular, he says, Jetsun Milarepa, for example, displayed incredible endeavor, enduring many hardships to achieve his profound aims. And if we may think we can't be the same as Milarepa, turns out that that's just, you know, it's the second kind of laziness. But if we think of what he had to go through in order to attain awakening, oh my God, that was like, that's the most amazing example of perseverance ever. And we assume it was joyful because it was for the Dharma. So, and he wanted the Dharma. So he did whatever he had to do to get the Dharma teachings. And if you don't know the story of Milarepa, if anybody doesn't know that, you can find that. You can find it online. So Dzingbo Chense Rinpoche says, be like a parent providing for much-loved children. Or we could think of our pets if we don't have children or someone else that we love just so much. Never thinking that you have done too much for others, or even that you have done enough. So this is the third kind of joyful effort that he's talking about here. Just never think you've done enough. Just the same way for your beloved, you know, parent or your beloved children or your beloved pet, you would do whatever it takes to help them. You would never think, oh, I did enough. Now you just have to suffer or do without. He also says a bodhisattva must have. Okay, so here he's referring back to the beginning of the verse. Let's look at the verse for a second. You don't have to have it in front of you, and I'm not going to pull it up, but He starts the verse, Tomei Zanpo starts the verse by saying, if listeners and solitary Buddhas, in striving just for their own benefit, are seen to focus with the same resolve as putting out a fire on their head. So we're referring here to the third and the fourth Buddha families, types of connection to our Buddha nature, the Pracheka Buddha, the Shravakas, who are the listeners, and the Pracheka Buddhas, which literally translates to solitary Buddhas or self-made Buddhas. They don't have, like, it's not the Mahayana. They're not actively working on the compassion aspect, though I'm sure they have compassion. They are working to free themselves personally through meditation, through meditative absorption. And to do that, to just free themselves from suffering, they focus with the same resolve as putting out a fire on their head. That's how hard they practice. That's their, like, focus and perseverance and determination. If we had a fire on our head, we would be very diligent about putting it out. We wouldn't, like, take a break and go watch TV for a while or lie down and take a nap. We would put out the fire. So if they work that hard and they're just working for themselves, how much harder do we, Fanny's demonstrating with a glass of water. How much harder should we be working? Do we need to work if we're not only freeing ourselves, but all other sentient beings? If the scope of our Dharma practice is so much vaster, then how can we not put that same amount of effort into it? So here, Dingo Chensei Rinpoche says, a bodhisattva must have far greater diligence than a Shravaka or a Pracheka Buddha, because the bodhisattva has taken the responsibility of accomplishing the ultimate happiness of Buddhahood, not only for himself, but for countless beings. And then he says, to increase your diligence generally, if we're not feeling diligent today, to increase our diligence, reflect on, and everybody knows what the answer is, if we're wasting our time, what do we need to reflect on? Reflect on how impermanent everything is. Death is inevitable and may come suddenly and very soon. Think how shallow and superficial this life's ordinary concerns really are in that light. It's like when you get the diagnosis, suddenly all the crap falls away and you don't waste time anymore and you appreciate your life and you appreciate everybody that you love in ways that you don't when death is not, like, within your sights. So let's pretend that death is within our sights, like, because we know that it is, even though we don't know when it's coming. And so that will help free us from the three kinds of laziness. And then he uses this example, which is similar to how Trungpa Rinpoche used to say that we should meditate. He says, if you suddenly realize that in your lap, in a fold of your clothes, a venomous snake was hiding, would you wait to take action even for a second? We can all ask ourselves that question. It's like having the fire on your head. No, you're not going to go, like, fritter away some time. You know, if snake is in your lap, then you're going to rest in nature of mind, because, like, you have no other opportunity. It's going to be gone that soon. So I have two more things I want to look at. One is briefly Ornament of Precious Liberation, and the other is Ken MacLeod, if we have time. We're going to skip Kenpo Sultram Jongso Rinpoche, but what he has to offer us that no one else has is the same thing he offered in the Patience Paramita, which is that it has four qualities. I don't think we'll have time, but I'll put it on online. 191, 192. So back in the Ornament of Precious Liberation, page 191 and 192. So for those familiar with Gampopa's fabulous manual here, the Ornament of Precious Liberation, he starts out each chapter the same way, with the seven topics or however many topics that can vary. And the first one is always, what are the drawbacks of not having it? And what are the advantages of having it, this paramita? So he says, so with regard to not having it, and this is similar to what he says for every paramita after the first one, someone possessing the qualities of generosity and so forth, meaning all the other paramitas except for perseverance or diligence. Oh, wait a minute. I'm looking at meditative concentration here. I'm about to read meditative concentration. Let us find. Now I'm in patience. Okay, here we are. It is actually on page 191, just as I said. So even though possessing the qualities of generosity and so forth, same thing that he says in meditative concentration, a person devoid of diligence will waste their time. When time is wasted, virtue is not accomplished. There is no ability to benefit others. So if we don't possess, the disadvantage of not having diligence is that you will waste your time. If we find ourselves wasting time and we recognize that and become aware of that, that is lack of diligence. It's like we can, that's like textbook lack of diligence is when we're wasting our time. And when we're wasting our time, we're not progressing on the path and we are not benefiting others. But on the other hand, the advantage of having it is possession of diligence, the opposite of wasting time, prevents all the bright qualities from becoming tainted. So our qualities of Buddha nature and Buddhahood and virtue accumulation, all of those qualities are shiny and bright when we have diligence, and they increase rather than decreasing. Moreover, if someone possesses diligence, the attainment of enlightenment will be rapid. So that makes sense. Like, that's just logic, right? If we are applying ourselves consistently, then we will travel the path consistently and therefore more quickly than someone who's... It's the tortoise and the hare, guys. You know, we want to be the tortoise who he doesn't go fast, but he still gets there more quickly, right? Because he's steady. So we want steadiness. All right. Now, so then I already read the definition of diligence from Ornament of Precious Liberation. So let's take a pop quiz. And do we remember what the definition of diligence is? To delight in virtue. Very nice, Marilyn. Oh, you're looking at it. Okay. I think that was all that I was going to read from Ornament of Precious Liberation. But I highly encourage everyone to read all the Paramitas and study them. I'd like to look at Ken MacLeod briefly because, you know, this isn't one of his more inspiring chapters, but it's still got some pretty good stuff in it. Does anybody have anything they'd like to say? Because I'd rather have your comments and questions and not have Ken if you have something. Yes, Lama Jinzan.
I think one thing also that is difficult, I've experienced difficulty with, and as I've gotten older, thankfully the joy of getting older has come some relative wisdom, which is that remembering it's not just that you're going to die, but that you have reincarnations, that there is the next life. Yeah. Because a lot of what this is all based upon is people who grew up in a culture that assumed with great assurance that there were future lives. So you could easily say that, you know, what I'm doing now is going to affect me, not now. And why to say, don't just think of this future, this particular life, but to think of future lives. And so in my life now, having just turned 60 and but way before that, in I think turning 50 was really the beginning for me, was being able to look back at my own life and see certain thoughts that arose and certain and certain specific moments in my life where I've really thought, I just don't get how I could be having these thoughts, having been born in Northern New Jersey, you know, in 1958, you know, the coming of age in the 60s, like, how could I possibly have that thought? And then various things along the way that have helped me. And because that's one of my biggest things is like saying there's got to be something other, because these thoughts that have been just naturally arose, I never read about Buddhism. I never intellectually followed through with other religions, like, but somehow I have propensities towards certain ideas. There's something other there, you know. I'm not willing to concede that, oh, I can't fathom, it's all logical, because I think, and that's helped me also, is like strengthening within myself the notion that there is something after this particular life that says there's something further. And so I really do have to watch karma. I really do have to say, I'd rather watch TV. Well, okay, I'm not benefiting someone, but at least I'm not harming someone. But to get to the idea that I'm wasting time is to say in the future life, this will ripen. Yeah. And so somehow strengthening that, you know, acceptance or belief that something other than this life exists.
Yeah.
That's something I've had to struggle with.
Point, yes. I mean, one of my great motivations for Dharma practice has been, I don't want to carry this stuff with me to the next life. Like, let's take care of it here. I don't want to go through this again. All right, thank you, Lama Jinzong. Anybody else before we look at Ken McLeod? Is your hand up, Dan, or are you just thinking? Just talking to Clementine. All right, well, we're going to look briefly at Ken McLeod because I want to have a couple of minutes at the end for John to explain the Zoom updating. So Ken says, and this is one of his contemplations, take a moment. So we're going to take a moment. Take a moment right now. Let's get into contemplation mode. Take a moment right now and consider the idea of doing whatever you need to do to free all beings everywhere, from their confusion, their emotional reactions, their projections, all their struggles with life. Time is of no consequence. 1,000 years, 1,000,000,000 years, 10 quadrillion years, it does not matter. Numbers do not intimidate you. 1,000 worlds, 1,000,000,000,000 worlds, each with billions of beings, it does not matter. You will do whatever it takes for as long as it takes. Take a few moments and feel what it is like to embrace that possibility, to free all beings everywhere from their confusion, emotional reactions, projections, and struggles with life. So let's just think what that would feel like to have that kind of determination, completely undiscouraged determination. And that was the word that Lama Nyingma Rinpoche used too with regard to the second kind of, the third kind of patience is to have determination. He said, what does he say? Let me see if I can pull this up really quickly because it's so helpful. So he says, strengthening your determination is really the key to success in Dharma practice. It's all about determination and resolve and being undiscouraged. So, and then I'm going to have Ken take us through very briefly what makes it transcendent. Like perseverance is all well and good, but even persevering in the Dharma is not necessarily going to free us completely. So what makes it transcendent? What is it that pushes us to the other shore of awakening? To arrive at the perfection of energy, he calls it energy, like that's a whole nother one. To arrive at the perfection of energy, you have to take one more step. Ask yourself, who is it that's helping beings? And you just look for who is it? Where is that being or that person who is helping beings? He says, as before, look and rest. Rest in the looking, look in the resting. Who is it? And we don't have time to really like sit with it, but you could do that at home. And he says, at some point, if you sit like this and look for who it is, the conceptual mind drops away and you see that while you help others in whatever way you can, there is no you there, nor are there any others there. You know, it's the same, it's the three spheres, the three, whatever you want to call them, the three concepts, thinking that there's someone doing something you're doing, someone you're doing it for and something being done, you let go of that. And Ken says the way to let go of it is to just look. Who is it who's doing this? So he says, everything you do is simply a natural response to what you see, hear, feel, and understand. So it's not like a self-conscious, ego-driven generosity, ethical conduct, patience, and perseverance. It's just what's happening. So we're going to stop there. We're going to dedicate the merit. And then anybody who still is uncertain about how to update Zoom, it's only going to take a couple minutes for John to show us. He's going to screen share and show us the steps. But anybody who needs to leave or doesn't need that, you can leave after the dedication, or you can hang out with us in solidarity. So we'll do the four verses of dedication. This merit may it win omniscience, defeat my faults the enemy, then from the rough and stormy sea of birth, old age, death, and disease, from this ocean of samsara, may I liberate all beings. They know things in their true existence, Kuntu, Zangpo, and Manjushri. To train myself in their example, I dedicate this practice fully. May every being through this practice completely gather merit and wisdom, attaining the two sacred bodies that merit and wisdom emanate. The blessings of the Buddha Kayas, the blessings of changeless Dharmata, the blessings of the steadfast Sangha, this dedication please fulfill. And we'll take one moment to just come back to rest in awareness. And my doorbell just rang. I think it's probably just a package, but I'm gonna see if I can give a screen share. All right, John, you're gonna share the screen. And I don't see.
I can do it.
Okay, good, good.
So here we go. So anyway.
I'll be right back, but you go ahead.
Yeah, so you're gonna update. This is what. You should be, hopefully you're using this app. That's the way to do it, the Zoom app. And we'll just give you a second. So it's this here. Hold on. So this here is the app. And you won't get this if you just press the link to the teaching today. That bypasses this, and you won't have to update that. But for updating, you go to right next to your name, this little arrow, drop down arrow. Get that, and you go down to check for updates. Get that, and then it tells you checking for updates right there. Actually, right here, you can see it says a new update's available. So it'll come up here in a minute, and this little box will change, and you'll be able to install it.
Is that clear to everybody? Okay, John, can you go through that one more time? Would that be helpful, Marilyn? Marilyn, I'm going to unmute you. You're unmuted.
The issue is that when I open the app, I don't get any of this stuff that John, that either you, John, just had, or I just get an option to open for a meeting or not.
Me too.
Oh, wait a minute, Marilyn, do you have a Zoom account, like your own Zoom account?
Well, I've got some sort of those numbers things, and I did try and do it.
Okay, so you've opened a Zoom account, which is different. You're not going to your account. You're going to your app. So, John, did you show them where to find the app?
I went into my apps. That's how I got it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't do it now because the screen's too big. But, yeah, I went into my apps and clicked on the Zoom. And then all I got was the dialogue box that said, do you want to join a meeting? When I closed that and try again, I got something that gave me these weird numbers that seemed how to be my account, but it didn't say anything about what John is showing us about Zoom. So perhaps I need to just give up on my this and work with somebody else because there's something not right.
I think you need to download the app. It doesn't sound like it's you've installed the program.
Nobody could be here with us if they didn't have it on their computer. It's not possible to participate in a meeting if it's not on your computer.
I think it is. I think
that's the first prompt that you get to join the first meeting is to download Zoom.
Oh.
So it's on the computer somewhere.
Yeah, it's in my apps. I go down to my apps, and there the last one is zoom.us.
And you click on start Zoom?
It does. There's no start Zoom.
Oh.
So you don't have to sign in?
No.
Oh, Mark says he can clarify. I'm going to, Mark, Mark, can you unmute yourself? Because I don't have you on my screen.
Okay.
Okay.
Can you hear me? Yeah, John was correct that I want to add a question for him actually, because when you click on the links that are in your emails,
mm-hmm.
what I get and what I use is just a little, it's something called a Zoom loader.
Mm-hmm.
And it just starts a session, which is not part of an app or not even part of an account, but it still lets me do all the things like see everybody and, even though I don't have a picture of myself, that's missing. But you don't actually need to have the app to join the meeting is what I'm saying.
Okay. Well, so what is it? What is that thing? I mean, that would seem to suggest that people don't have anything to update, so they don't need to worry about it.
Yeah, and you never have to update that thing.
Okay. But so what is that thing that happens to all of us when we first join a Zoom meeting, like our very first meeting where it says download Zoom? That's the first prompt you get. So that's something else. It's just, it's not something that needs to be updated.
Yeah, it's like an instantaneous thing. It just downloads it onto your browser, into your browser, and then you're always running whatever the latest version is.
Okay, great.
What you're referring to is a Zoom account. You don't have to have a Zoom account.
Oh, no, I know. I'm not referring to a Zoom account. So
that's how you get this little box there that I showed you.
Oh, okay. So then you only have to update if you have a Zoom account. So most people don't have that. Hardly anybody has that. Okay. All right, Ann, what did you have to say?
Well, when I got your email today and I went and clicked on the link because I don't have an account or anything.
Yeah.
And it was in joining up, there was a little oval capsule that said update now. And I just clicked on that and it was part of just joining the meeting.
Okay.
I don't know what that is, but.
You mean when it happened when you were coming into the meeting?
Well, I did it earlier when I was emailing you. It was before the meeting began, but I clicked on the link and it went to, going to a Zoom meeting, and I said yes, and then this little capsule came up, update.
Okay. Well, we can look for that.
That was easy.
Maybe this is much ado about nothing because we don't actually have anything we need to update. I mean, I do because I have an account.
Well, last week, picture of myself was in slow motion. Nobody else was, but mine was. So I didn't know if that had to do with not updating yet.
So and today it was better?
Yes.
Yeah, who knows?
I think I'm going to give up here because it's working just fine and I can't figure out how to get the other things up, and maybe at some point I will, but I guess I don't have an account.
Sounds like much ado about nothing. My apologies to everybody. But this is something John and I have talked about, is the need for everybody to update. But I guess there was an assumption that everybody had an account. And I didn't think people had an account, but I did think you had something to update. So my mistake.
Thank you.
Thanks for hanging out with us.
Bye.
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 Okay, John, you want to stand in for a minute? And Mark?
Yeah.
And everybody else can. Well, that's Ann and you guys. Anyway, bye, Ann. All right, so it sounds like that's all set then, and you don't need to send out any more update reminders.
Yeah, it sounded to me like Anne has an account, but she hit the link anyway, and that asterisk, her account wanted to be updated.
Yeah, I don't think we ever sort that out, but she knows how to update now. So if she sees the update prompt, then she can update.
Yeah, if you have an account, then things get more complicated.
Yeah.
But it also allows you to have your own meeting and start your, start
meetings
and things like that. So
yes,
now you have links in them and stuff.
So. Yeah. All right. Well, I think problem solved. And thank you, John and Mark, for your help in solving that problem. Yeah. All right. Anything else we need to talk about before we go? All right. Then good. Then thanks for the help and thanks for being here. And I'm going to end the meeting.
Okay.